This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Mark Reardon Show.
We call my plan Bidenomics. Guess what?
It's working.
I will say that there have been so many accomplishments under this administration, it can be difficult to list them in a distilled way.
I do not hate anyone. So I say this gently. The Biden administration sucks.
This is The Mark Reardon Show.
Yes, yes, yes. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. A beautiful fall day. It's a little chillier than yesterday or the day before, but that's okay because it's November and we're a week away, just a little bit more, a week away from Thanksgiving. So we're getting set for that. I'm very excited about Thanksgiving, team. I don't know about
you. Are
you? Well, yeah, because it's for me, you know, I got both kids in town. Fred, you're going to be out of town with your kids.
I am.
But it's weird because, you know, I've never had both of them living so far away, Sue.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Aiden lives in Chicago now and Evan's down in Houston. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And Fred and I are both, I'm not trying to rub it in, okay, because you're here next week.
Yeah,
Mike Elam will keep you company, but Fred and I will be off next week. We do have a couple of changes for this week just because Jane ditched out on Friday on us, so she won't be on.
Oh, she did.
Oh, she claims she's traveling. Or something like
whatever.
That. That's okay. Donna Behringer, I think, is going to fill in on Friday. And we still have a couple more days to go. Here we got Kilmeade coming up in this hour. Phil Holloway also. You know, I'll ask Phil this question. Sue, I don't know if you followed this today, but the Lake and Riley trial is over.
It's over?
Not only is it over, but he's already been sentenced.
What?
Like, this thing lasted like 3 days. It was not a jury trial. So the judge decided guilt or innocence, and he ruled on all this today, and then all of a sudden they took a break and they sentenced him.
Well, I assume he's guilty, and I hope he's gone for a long time.
Yeah, he is very guilty, and it does appear that he will be gone for life. Some of this was, you know, one of those things where you have this charge and that charge, and then you have, you know, concurrent versus consecutive, and he was doing consecutive. Here he is reading the sentences.
Count one. Malice murder, I sentence you to life without the possibility of parole. Count two will be vacated as a matter of operation of law. Count three.
I mean, basically, it's life in prison four. With no chance of parole. Now, this is disappointing because I still remain a death penalty proponent, and this would be a perfect case for the death penalty. The prosecutor wimped out on this, which I think is disappointing. This was tough to hear. Fred, you followed a fair amount of this week, right? And I heard a lot of the testimony earlier in the week. And, you know, some of the friends, family members, mom and dad of Lake and Riley went up today and addressed the court.
He ripped away every beautiful memory we will ever be able to make with her again. This horrific individual robbed us all of our hopes and dreams for Lakin. Your Honor, I'm asking you to please give Jose Ibarra the same thing he gave us when he made the choice to take Lakin's life and destroy ours. He showed no mercy on Lakin when she was begging for her life.
You know, and that's one of the it's one of the tough things that you heard this week in the testimony. You had an officer yesterday that testified about the fingernail scratches. There's every indication that Lakin Riley fought literally to her death. Ugh. Like a relatively long struggle. And, you know, it's just awful. So, unfortunately, the judge can't show the same type of treatment because there is no death penalty in this case. But it's good that that was resolved very quickly. And as Paul Morrow's been saying and other people on Fox, I think Brian will, you know, agree with this. There's a lot more of these guys out there.
There are other Jose Ibarras out there that we have imported into this country. Who we are paying to stay here, who we are flying around at their whim, who we are, in fact, under the CHN program, flying into this country. And if I sound angry, I am.
Yeah, he should be angry. So we're going to continue to cover that. And I mentioned Mr. Kilmeade coming up here in a couple of minutes. The biggest story of the day, which is kind of hard for me to keep track of things, but I think if I have to power rank them right now, it's the bathroom situation on Capitol Hill with all the other work we have to do. Now, I do have some what I think is good news here this afternoon on this front. This was a statement that was issued earlier this afternoon, not too long ago, from Democrat Congressperson Sarah McBride. This is the Delaware trans biological male, now a female. The fight from Nancy Mace in particular over bathrooms. But here is the message, and I'll kind of back up on this here in just a little bit and tell you what happened in the background today. But Sarah McBride issued a statement that said, I'm not here to fight about bathrooms. I'm here to fight for all Delawareans. Huh. Not an easy thing to say there.
No.
And to bring down costs facing families, like all members, I will follow the rules as outlined by Speaker Johnson, even if I disagree with them. This effort to distract from the real issues facing this country hasn't distracted me over the last several days as I've remained hard at work preparing to represent the greatest state in the union come January. Problem is that she has, you know, drawn a lot of attention to herself. Look, Riley Gaines posted a picture not too long ago of Sarah McBride posting a selfie in a bathroom and said, here I am using a women's restroom in North Carolina that I'm technically barred from bringing in. And Riley Gaines was, you know who doesn't have to take a selfie in the women's restroom to prove that they're a woman? Women.
Women.
Yeah. Women don't have to do that. But let's get with Nancy Mace, who's from South Carolina, has not been backing down on this at all, even though she keeps getting, you know, asked questions. So here she was earlier today.
So I'm not going to allow biological men into women's private spaces. I will stand in the brink and stand in the way of anyone on the radical left who thinks that it's okay for a penis to be in a women's locker room or a bathroom or a changing room. Hell no. I'm not going to stand for it. And the speaker said it would be in the House rules package. If it's not, I'll be ready with a motion, a privileged motion, to force a vote on this. This is not okay. I'm a survivor of rape. I'm a survivor of sexual abuse. And I'm not going to allow any man in any female private spaces.
Now, Speaker.
End of story. And by the way, I'm getting death threats from men pretending to be women. Why is it that these crazy people, the insanity, the radical left, are willing to kill women over a man's right to be in a women's restroom?
That's just a very interesting question. By the way, it's Trans Awareness Day today, in the middle of Trans Awareness Month and all this other stuff. Just so you know. But so the reporter, I think that was a reporter from ABC, wants to push back.
We're going to peel away from this conversation, Kira. So a little bit.
Right, that's not the right one. Here it is. Sorry about that.
Well, forcing this congressperson to go into a male restroom, is that dignity and respect?
Forcing women to share private spaces with men is not dignity and not respect. And I'm absolutely going to stand in the way of anyone who thinks it's okay for a man to be in our locker room, in our changing rooms, in our dressing rooms, in women's bathrooms. And in fact, if you agree with that, you're crazy, because that's not okay. It's not okay.
You know, I agree with Nancy Mace. There's been people out there, and I get that this is not the biggest issue on Capitol Hill. I'm actually glad that Sarah McBride decided, look, we're going to put this aside. I'm going to use the women's or the men's restroom or the unisex. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to go in the men's restroom. Use the unisex. John Fetterman issued a statement saying,
exactly,
you know what? She can use my restroom in my office. There's plenty of places to pee, okay, if that's what you need to do. But there have been people out there saying, sorry, Republicans, but bathroom bills make no practical sense and do nothing to protect women's safety. Anyone who tragically is going to harm women in the bathroom isn't deterred by a policy. Well, wait a second on that. This is where I would take issue with that. And Mark Hemingway, who is a pundit out there, said this. No, once bathrooms are accepted, they'll push for entry into locker rooms. That's the plan. I'm done with the slippery slope. And he's absolutely right about that. This is what, you know, the plan is. You have, there's a representative from, I'd have to see what state this is. Zoe Zephyr. It's not a congresswoman. It's a state rep in a state that said, I literally just got out of meetings with my members of Congress and I used the bathroom on my way out. Trans women are women, full stop. We're every bit as, quote, biologically female as cis women, And Speaker Johnson's statement doesn't change the fact that women's spaces include trans women. Let's just kind of evaluate that for a second. This is why, you know, and I had Paul Scanlon on from Raleigh Gaines Center yesterday. Riley's told me this, too, in the interview that I did with her. Why is it that they're unable to address this issue of fairness, right? Well, because once they do it, then the whole house of cards. Exactly. So with this person saying trans women are women, full stop, we're every bit as biologically female.
No.
That's just factually not close to being true.
Right.
So you lose all credibility when you say something like that. And the rest of the country is kind of on to that. So this really isn't even a debate outside of, you know, activists out there. And by the way, outside of the legacy media. So this was the legacy reporter after Nancy Mace walks away.
We're going to peel away from this conversation, Kira. So a little bit of the context of what we were just talking about.
Yeah, the context. I love that the ABC reporter wants to put something into context right now for the rest of us. It's just a bunch of nonsense. It really is.
I think she was clear. I don't see any context needed.
Right. I don't think there's a lot of context needed either. And some of these things, and I think we know this. You know, when Nancy Mace says that she's getting threats from men, some of the trans men, whoever they are revoltingly threatening and violent. And these are the people on the empathetic left, right?
This is the people you want out of the bathroom.
Yes, I would agree. All right, I want to go back to a trial here, Danny Penny's trial, because I've been following this as well. And there was something that was released today on the Free Press by Olivia Rheingold, who's a reporter over there. She got a hold of the first police interview that Danny Penny did in the aftermath of what happened on that subway car. And, you know, what I said earlier today on Twitter is this is really a good watch, and I'm going to play you some of the audio here. This is really a good watch, and also never talk to the cops without an attorney. Just don't do it, ladies and gentlemen. No offense to you officers out there, but do not talk to the cops without an attorney. Danny Penny makes the mistake. He goes in there thinking the cops are his friends. They're not looking at him as a suspect, right? Because he didn't do anything wrong. He's trying to save people on this F train. But this is what it sounded like. At first, they start out kind of jovial.
How you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Very good. Very good. I'm doing well.
Yes.
Served in the Marine Corps there?
I did, yes.
Served in the Marine Corps.
Oh, nice. Nice, man.
Got my little death before dishonor test.
There you go. Nice, man.
What you doing? What was your MOS in the
I was in 0351.
I was 0331.
So a little small talk here. They're just catching up. One of the officers was in the Marines and, you know, just kind of trying to come up with some things that are relatable.
So I have class down in Brooklyn. I take the F down to J Street Metro Tech. My class was at 12. So once the class finished up, I was going straight to the gym. I go to the gym in Lifetime on 23rd Street. So I get off. I take the F straight from school to the gym. Mm-hmm. Was on there. I forget what stop it was at, but some guy came in. He's like, whipped his jacket off, and he's like, I'm gonna kill everybody. I can go to prison forever. I don't care. I don't do this. At that point, I looked to the person next to me like, hey, just hang on to this phone for me. I had my headphones in and took it off and just kind of like grabbed him from behind because he came in just to like, because he was acting like a lunatic, like a crazy person.
Yeah, he was acting like a lunatic because he was a lunatic and he was threatening people. I, for one, who've been to New York City, Fred, you've been to New York City. We've all been there on a subway car. I've been in subway cars where it's a little uncomfortable with people who may be mentally ill. I've never been on one where someone's, you know, shouting out that they're going to kill everyone and they're willing to go to prison for the rest of their life. I would love for, you know, someone like Daniel Penny to be on that car, especially if my family was there. I'd like to think that I would be, you know, brave enough to step in that moment, but I think a Marine probably has a better shot at this.
So I came up, he was had his back turned to me, and I just kind of got him in a hold, got him to the ground. He's still like squirming around and still, you know, going crazy. And I turned to a guy, I'm like, hey, call the cops, because the train arrived in Broadway.
Yeah.
And then waited for you guys.
So he continues to tell the story, and they kind of have him go through an example of what he did with the chokehold, if you will.
Yeah, so he's standing behind me, yeah. And I kind of came like this.
Okay. Did you apply pressure, Daniel?
No, I did. I wasn't. I just wanted to keep him from getting to people.
Did you put your hooks in?
Wrap my legs.
Did you learn the jiu-jitsu from the Marine Corps?
I did, yes.
You learned how to grapple in the Marine Corps. What belt level are you made into?
Green
belt?
Yeah.
Good. All right.
Yeah, they kind of talk about how he, you know, he achieved this level of green belt in the Marine Corps, and you know, then they. And I'm not saying the cops were trying to, you know, pin him down on a specific crime here, but they clearly were going at him for a reason. And then there was the final exchange here.
I wasn't like, I'm not trying to, like I said, I'm not a confrontational guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not out here like trying to attack people, you know, not me, not how I was trained.
Yeah.
You know, I just felt the need that this guy was saying that he's going to kill people, that he was prepared to go to jail for life. I hear that. I'm like,
mm-hmm. But he was making enough of a scene that you noticed him, and then you probably would have noticed if he put his hands on someone.
But I didn't.
Okay. All right.
So that was an interesting moment because he was making enough of a scene that you probably would have noticed if he put his hands on someone. And he admitted, Daniel Penny's like, yeah, I didn't want him to do that. So we were trying to prevent him from doing that. That's how I interpret that moment.
And then once he starts doing that, that's when you try to subdue him.
Yes. I wasn't trying to, like, injure him.
Right.
I'm just trying to keep him from hurting anybody else. He's threatening people. That's what we learn in the Marine Corps. That's what you guys learn as police officers. It's the same thing if you're off duty. You're going to intervene in a situation where it's...
Yeah, exactly. Now, the audio cut off there. But you already said to the cops, he goes, that's what you would do. If you're off duty and you're not, you know, doing your job right now as a cop and you see something like this, you're going to step in and you're going to try to help. And that's what he did. Look, the standard here in this criminal trial and all criminal trials is reasonable doubt. There is more than enough reasonable doubt. Even based on that video right there in that interview, this is a ridiculous trial. Free Danny Penny and move on with it. Try to address some of the real crimes happening in New York City. How embarrassing. Kilmeade's coming up next. Right now, Mr. Brian Kilmeade back with us. You heard him on the radio here this morning, saw him on TV. Brian, how are you?
Oh, good, Mark.
Don't you wish that every murder trial in America was as efficient as the Lake and Riley trial? Because that didn't take long, did it?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you almost had the whole thing on videotape. So it was done. It was he turned down the jury, so ready to go, got the sentence, and we're done with him. But the symbolic nature of what's going on at the same time, Tom Holman's talking about what he wants to do. And anybody who says at any moment, well, they're exaggerating, this is about an election, this is not really a problem, all you have to do is check out this courtroom and check out where this person came from. New York, moved here, got here illegally. Then in an effort to get him out of New York, they said free flights anywhere you want. He picked Georgia, and then he kills Lake and Riley. So, and then hooked up to the gangs. Oh, the president's overstating. President-elect's overstating how bad the gang problem is. No, he's a member of it. Oh, so are his brothers. Now they're in 16 states. So you have a problem with that? Yeah, I'm still these tone-deaf mayors. Yeah, I'm still for sanctuary cities. I'm going to be Trump-proof my state. I'm going to have a city council vote to make sure sanctuary cities stay in. So if you show up at a prison to pick up a prisoner to get him out of the country, they're going to fight you. Where are these lunatics from, these mayors? Have they not seen any of this coverage? Do they not know the magnitude of this problem?
You know, it's amazing. Brandon Johnson kind of leading the way in Chicago. And then there's the Los Angeles, you know, Unified School District, which has, you know, doubled down on some of this stuff as well. And there's still this inability, Brian, and I don't know why this is so difficult, to distinguish between illegal migrants and legal people who are here in this country just trying to, you know, fulfill their American dream. There's an unwillingness on the part of the left. Now, they've been a little quiet here with Lake and Riley to even acknowledge that simple fact.
Yeah, I mean, there's a major difference, and there's a priority. And they have to know, too, that you just can't come out and say, I'm only getting rid of criminals, because that's a loophole that'll be exploited. They'll still get people in here pretending to be workers, working in the fields, you know, picking the mangoes and handling the corn like they're doing. And you see these reports, these farm workers working very hard, trying to pursue some type of semblance of a life because of the horrible place they're coming from. They don't have work visas. So what do we do with them? Well, that's not the priority. But we can't just say, we're not going to get rid of you. We've got to tell everyone, if you're here illegally, that's the issue. And if you committed a crime, you're the priority. Coming up next is going to be the people here who overstayed their visas. Coming up next is the people, perhaps, that have that are here working illegally, which you can verify by getting back to E-Verify and then finding businesses for hiring them. You begin to squeeze them out. And then you work on it to revolutionize and update our work visa. We need people coming in and getting out. We need workers We need to keep our first-round draft picks from Stanford University that we train and then send back to Singapore or Malaysia or Tajikistan, whatever the case may be. Give them an option. But we can't do anything until you seal the border. We won't talk about anything until you pick up the criminals.
Brian Kilmeade back with us this afternoon. This next topic probably requires a few visits. I don't even know how to start on this one because it makes me laugh. Morning Joe and the meeting at Mar-a-Lago and the about face. This is comedy gold here, isn't it, Brian?
It is. I can't get my head around it.
I know.
I can't get my head around it. It's very similar, Mark, if you think about it. To remember, you know, one minute, Joe Biden's fine. How dare you bring up his cognitive dissonance? How he's seemingly out of it, how he freezes, how he can't walk, how he can't leave a stage. Well, how dare you be cruel? This guy's the most effective president ever. And then all of a sudden he has that debate and he becomes the worst. CNN panels all blowing him up. It's time to make a change. We got to get him out. We got everything we're saying without acknowledging that we were right for 3 years. And now, and then, of course, we know the election result was exactly a 32% vice president, totally ineffective, tries to become president. Without answering a question, it's not going to happen. So we get the result, we get the result. But now you want us to go back and pretend that you didn't call him Hitler, you didn't call him a fascist, you didn't call him unhinged, you didn't call him incapable, you didn't call him illegitimate. We decided to open up a line of communication. You decided to.
Yeah, I know, I love it.
It's really unbelievable. I mean, there are things that we've all done, and we turn around, we change our minds, but this one's in a Hall of Fame level, and I don't understand. I guess it's because they're so desperate to turn things around, and I don't know what the edict was from the bosses, but this is such a step, and it's so embarrassing for these two, and I don't know if they realize how much they've embarrassed themselves over the past 4 to 5 months.
I think they have. I mean, I don't watch the show. I'm busy, but I'm seeing some clips. And I evidently their listeners have just tuned out. They were tuning out anyway. But if they just stayed consistent and they were saying, we thought that they were unhinged. We you know, watched some of those clips and we make montages out of it. But I did not know that they were literally making it up. I thought they believed it. And I just thought that's because they have a form of Trump derangement syndrome. Everything he does, it's got to be bad, and when he does something good, we got to change the subject. But now we find out they didn't even mean what they said.
Apparently not.
So now their viewers, they have even less viewers, or no one could ever believe another word they say. And now they're trying to act like they were the bigger people. They approached the president.
I know. It's a complete joke. Where are you on Nancy Mace and the bathroom bill? This has gotten a lot of attention on Capitol Hill, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that wherever you're born, that's a bathroom you use. That is, it's, you know, I know it's ridiculous, but it really isn't. It's the point that everyone's making. You know, you can't make other women uncomfortable because you want to be a woman. You know, there's a third bathroom. You got a big budget. Joe Biden, you got a new Green Deal. You have $10,000 to build another bathroom for future transgenders. You know, I don't know what Caitlyn Jenner uses. I really don't. It's not my business. But if she was a congressman, it would. So you're making women feel uncomfortable, all right? This is all of a sudden women don't matter. All of a sudden, you know, you're being, if you care about how women feel, you're being insensitive. So this person might be the best person in the world. Might be my new best friend if I ever meet them. But they build another, you build another bathroom, and the fact that it's a big deal, and if people don't understand it, shows you haven't learned anything from the election.
Well, and there's other things that are kind of in the background that are fascinating right now. Look, this isn't getting enough attention. I think maybe it will. I had Paula Scanlon on yesterday from the Riley Gaines Center, but this whole Title IX lawsuit with the trans volleyball player at San Jose State is fascinating, and it's the step that needed to take place. And, you know, I think we're finding in the aftermath of this election that a lot of younger people who maybe some of us thought were all woke on these particular issues, I think, you know, had their say to a certain extent on this issue in particular.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it really is so much of a bigger story because people are still saying this is a small portion of society. It's blown out of proportion. Jen Psaki and others saying, like Katie Couric and others saying they don't get it. The bigger story is, what don't you get? I'm not saying there's every transgender there, but you just shelve women's opportunities and their beliefs and their health in order to be politically correct. When to be politically correct used to be putting Me Too or understanding both genders should be equal. Now we think transgender should be superior. And when we bring up that both genders should be equal and there's only two genders, we got the problem. And America said, no, you don't have the problem. The normal people who understand things just don't speak up because they can't get their head around it. They think they're going to be canceled. Well, no one's going to be canceled anymore. And I just think everybody listening, if someone emails you with pronouns, do not answer that email.
You know, I'm right there with you. And I've seen a lot of people just virtue signal on this, and it'll be interesting to see if they back off on some of the so-called identifiers. Brian, I've seen some of your tweets. Did you watch the fight with Tyson and Jake Paul on Friday night?
I'm so angry. I'm so angry. Now, I know about the sad times when Ali boxed too long against Trevor Burbick. I know about Joe Louis needed money, had to go in the ring. I know all about boxers who stayed too long. Sadly, that is more part of the problem. I need to go back to the black and white video of Jack Johnson going against Jim Jeffries when he came out of retirement, lost about 60 pounds and got his head beat in for 15, 16 rounds. Now, at 57 years old, I know you're not the same fighter, but you have to try. And I'm not saying that, you know, if Tyson was out there and his punches were ridiculously late and he couldn't move his head and okay. And he looked like he was 20 pounds overweight. Instead, he trains for 6 months. He's in real good shape. We watch him train. We watch him spar. He's not the same fighter. He wasn't even good when he left, but he was on drugs when he left. That's why I talked to him when he was in his 40s, and I said to him, why don't you do what Foreman did? You come out, you relax in the ring, be a different fighter, pick your spots, and you know you could go get yourself out of debt because he famously promised to pay back his debts but was buried in debt. His ex-wife, his new wife, is fantastic. On a one-man show, wrote a series of books, a documentary, started a pot farm, and he's doing great. Fights Roy Jones. You know, you could tell that he didn't want to knock Roy Jones out, but he looked like a guy who's in his 50s. And, okay, but this was ridiculous. They had a deal, and he got $20 million not to hurt him and vice versa. And I think they're going to be sued because people bet on that fight a lot. And if you said fifth-round knockout Tyson or fifth-round knockout Jake Paul, then you find out Jake Paul says, I hit him in the second, realized he wasn't going to hit me back. And all that pre-fight stuff just melted away. And, you know, I saw that, you know, he was in trouble here. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well,
it should have been sanctioned.
It's so disappointing because one of the things that I've highlighted, and I did not see, I was in the middle of the woods here deer hunting, and we were having Netflix issues even beyond the issues that existed with Netflix because we were operating on a hotspot. But here's one of the things I've been pointing out, and I don't know how many people paid attention to this, but that undercard fight with Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor was outstanding. It was really, really good. Now, Serrano really won, and they gave it to Katie Taylor. But, you know, the real boxing occurred the fight before Jake Paul and Mike Tyson, Brian.
Yeah, but my problem is, not the quality. It was the effort.
Yeah.
He did not try. He did not try. And it's one of the things you learn. So I was writing some boxers, and I'm just saying, like, what are you saying? And they're like, well, Tyson's going to do it. And, you know, if he hits him once, you know, I talked to Joe Frazier, one of my first big interviews, and he was 44 years old. Marvis was yet to fight Tyson. And he goes, I got to fight this guy. I go, why? Because I would love to feel it. I go, what do you mean you love to feel it? He said, well, I felt Foreman. I'd love to feel his power. And I go, you know, what if Foreman hit like? He goes, well, he still hits the same way. You take your punch to your grave. It's just the speed in which you deliver it is which makes it hard. I said, oh, that's interesting. And I've heard that before. You take your – so all you have to do is line this guy up once. I mean, look at Tyson. He looked good. Physically, he looked fine. I know he had weak legs. But all you have to do one time, you bowl in and you miss or – you know, the combination's too slow, or you get caught. I get that. But going in, and you could see him pulling punches. And don't make me stay up till 12:30.
Yeah.
And when you pull punches, and then at the end of the fight, you basically say, I'm going to fight again, but you didn't even try this time.
Yeah.
He probably took advantage of the problem.
The time frame in particular for you guys out east was, I think, challenging. Brian, what's coming up on Saturday night?
Well, I can tell you for sure we got Tyrus going to break down the moments in media, so that'll be that's for certain. I think I'm going to have Jordan Peterson again. We're going to have Hulk Hogan on for sure. Talk about this change in perceptions. He was once one of the few. Now he's one of the many who do sports for a living and are rallying around him. And I'm just probably looking at immigration right now. Just looking at some people might have I might have Governor Sununu on, too, to break down what's happening politically with some of these nominations and the growing Trump team. But I think immigration is going to be my number one theme. And no one's talking about it, but 320,000 kids are missing, and the gangs are flourishing, And this is a so much worse than anyone thought. So much beyond when people say this is a campaign issue. This is so much bigger than they were even making at this campaign. But we're going to see some massive overhauls, and the plan's getting in place to do it.
Yeah, I can't wait. That's big. Can I just make one recommendation for the Saturday Night Show? How about a supercut of all the Trump dance moves by the athletes out there? Think about that. I think that's a good idea.
I think that we kind of did that Monday.
Damn it. I might have missed that. Yeah, I love the way that that's kind of taken on. Hey, I'm off next week. You might be off, too. Have a great Thanksgiving, Brian.
All right, stay within yourself, Mark. Have a great Thanksgiving, too.
Count one, malice murder. I find the defendant guilty. Count two, felony murder. I find the defendant guilty.
Yeah, and he, the judge in the Lakin Riley murder trial, just kept reading guilty verdict after guilty verdict. This was very, very efficiently done earlier today. Let's go to our friend Phil Holloway for the latest, who's been following this, Fox News legal analyst. How are you, Phil, this afternoon?
I'm doing great, guys. I hope you are, but I'm sorry that we're having to talk about this kind of a horrible, awful subject matter today.
I followed it quite closely and listened to a lot of the testimony and heard some of, you know, her family and friends this morning. But one thing that struck us, I think, Phil, is just the speed at which this trial took place. And then you have a verdict that comes in and then sentencing, boom, 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 one after another. That's a model that should be set up for the rest of the United States.
Well, it's a unique set of circumstances, and it would not have been possible if the defense team had not, for reasons that I can't really fully grasp at this point, if they had not waived his right to a jury trial. They opted for a bench trial, which means that the prosecutor had the much easier job of proving their case to only one person, which is the judge, versus, of course, 12 people on a jury. And of course, if you just get one juror who might somehow feel sorry for your client, maybe you can, you know, get that Hail Mary hung jury. But they gave that away when they waived jury. And of course, the judge, I mean, he took 15 minutes, but I think he probably, to find him guilty, I think he probably spent half of that time maybe going to the restroom or ordering lunch or something, because I don't think it really took him any time at all to make up his mind.
So, it was very, very fast. So why did the prosecutor in this case not, I heard some discussion of this earlier, this was not a death penalty case. Had it been a death penalty case, a couple of things could have happened. Maybe he goes to death row. But outside of that, maybe they plead guilty because, the writing was on the wall. And then you don't use all these resources. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the bottom line is that the Soros DA in Athens, Clark County, Deborah Gonzalez, she's on her way out of office. She got beat actually in a write-in campaign by an opponent in this last election. But she took office 4 years ago, having had no experience in criminal law whatsoever, and was an entertainment lawyer. And she pledged right out of the gate to never seek the death penalty. In fact, her office and she's not one really many felony jury trials at all, and it might be none. It may be that she's won none. I'll have to check my stats on that, but they have a very poor record of success. And so what she did is she was under a lot of pressure, so she brought in an outside prosecutor from the Prosecuting Attorney's Council of Georgia. And that person, Sheila Ross, is the one who did such a good job, presenting the state's case. And, of course, without the jury there, that was made even easier because the evidentiary presentation is streamlined.
Well, it's good that this one is in the books, and it was so fast. Have you been following, how closely have you been following the Danny Penny case? I talked about that a little bit earlier. I mean, this guy, talk about something that should happen fast. They should come in very quickly and say, free Danny Penny at this point, Phil.
Yeah, if it was the same, I wish we had the same judge, right, that was hearing the evidence in there, because he would have already dismissed the Penny case. This is another situation where Alvin Bragg is basically trying to create a case out of thin air that this really isn't there. You've seen witnesses that have basically come out and said, you know, they lied to the prosecutor in the investigation stage of the case. Just something like that alone would have caused me, when I was a prosecutor, to probably just go ahead and dismiss a case. If I find out that it's built on a house of lies or a house of, I'm going to go ahead and do the right thing morally, I think, and dismiss the case. But Alvin Bragg has no such interest in doing the right thing.
Well, I think they're going to be humiliated on this one. Phil, you have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving, because I don't think we're going to talk next week. I'm off. Thank you so much.
All right, brother. Anytime. Take care.
All right. That's Phil Holloway down in Georgia. By the way, you got a case that we're going to talk about in the next hour. Friend Alex Rich, we haven't spent some time with him from Y98. He visits Sue, as you know, on a Wednesday afternoon. And I didn't get into this case from Georgia with the mom who was arrested for allowing her 10-year-old son to walk to a Dollar General that was about a mile away. And the details of that case are fascinating. We'll get to that after Sue's news. I mentioned Pete Hegseth earlier this hour. I didn't take any. I didn't ask Brian this question, but let me just say this: there were a couple things that were really good this morning in the Wall Street Journal, and I pay a lot of money for the Wall Street Journal. I know many of you do not.
That's
I would
correct.
Give you my password if I could, but there was a great piece by Vivek and Elon on Doge, spelling out some of the goals there. I thought it was excellent, and then there was a piece by the editorial board on Pete Hegseth. And Sue, I don't know how much you've heard about the sexual assault claims that he had. The problem with these is, now, here's what they said. And from what I can gather from some of the other research I've done, much of this is true. Practically everything about what happened in this incident that goes back to 2017 seems in dispute, other than the fact that Pete Hegseth was in Monterey, California for a speaking engagement. So somebody claiming to be a friend of the woman that is accusing him, and I'll get to some of the details here in a second, sent a memo to Trump's team which alleges that the woman was at a bar with Hegseth after his speech that night, accompanying him to his hotel room. The next day had, quote, a moment of hazy memory of being raped the night before and had a panic attack. So the lawyer says, no, that's not what happened. They admit that Pete Hegseth was visibly intoxicated, that the woman in question was not. The lawyer says she led him by the arm to his hotel room and was the aggressor in initiating sexual activity. The city of Monterey, California has issued a statement saying, well, the police investigated, no charges were brought. The memo says the woman and her husband later hired a lawyer to ensure Hegseth didn't get off without punishment. So his attorney says that Pete strongly felt that he was the victim of blackmail and innocent collateral damage in a lie that the complainant was holding on to keep her marriage intact. So he settled the claim in 2020, knowing that it was at the height of the Me Too movement. Now, look, I alluded to this whole thing the other day because Vanity Fair, you know, went right at this particular allegation. So it was getting a little buzz, and it certainly looked like a hit piece. The issue is not what happened on that night in 2017 in Monterey, California, it seems, because there is a pretty good indication here this afternoon, this is getting out, that the Trump team is not happy with the fact that he was not honest about this. So the concern is that, you know, they didn't know about it. They were caught off guard. And because of that, you can believe this, it's sourced reporting, you know, believe it or not, that maybe this is a nomination that's in jeopardy right now. So, you know, what the Journal said is what happened 7 years ago might be impossible to prove or disprove, but even granting Mr. Hegseth the benefit of the doubt, it raises questions about judgment, including whether he warned the president-elect that this might come out. He has vigorously denied any of all accusations. No charges were filed, but the official statement is, we look forward to his confirmation as the United States Secretary of Defense. There's some sourced reporting says maybe otherwise, just because they felt like they were misled. But look, it's early in some of these things, and they're kind of keeping quiet on some of the other confirmations as well. There's a lot that can happen. One thing we know, they're sticking by Matt Gaetz, as far as we know at this moment. We got Sue's News coming up in the next hour here on 97.1 FM Talk. Also, after that, a conversation about this thing that happened in Georgia with the mom being arrested for allowing her kid just to walk to a Dollar General. It's all coming up.
Get more at 971talk.com.